Hello, and welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, June 30th, 2023. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labour, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, national politics reporter Stephen Wenzel sits down with Red Buffalo Nova Weipart to talk about how their multi-layered Indigenous identity informs their creative and professional work. Red Buffalo Nova Weipart is an Anishinaabe, Ojibwe, Two-Spirit, and transgender interdisciplinary artist, writer, director, educator, and storyteller. Nova is a proud enrolled member of the Pinaimutang First Nation located in Treaty 2 territory and is a recent graduate of the Master of Fine Arts program at Emily Carr University of Art and Design. They are a longtime collaborator, producer, and video mentor with Access to Media Education Society, or AIMS, and their work has been screened at festivals such as Imaginative Film and Media Arts Festival and Vancouver Queer Film Festival. Here are Stephen Wenzel and Red Buffalo Nova Weipart in conversation. Take a listen.
So Nova, it's so great that you're joining us here on Rabble Radio. First, to get started, tell us a bit about yourself and the work that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me, Stephen, and Rabble Radio. I usually start off, you know, my interviews with my ceremonial greetings. Anim bonjour, niz manitouag, misko bijigi dishnakas, migizi do dem, nin da wu, anishinaabe, pinaimutang, dojibwa. Hello! My name is Red Buffalo Nova Weipart. Red Buffalo is my traditional name. I also have Little Rainbow Girl as another traditional name that I got in a naming ceremony back when I was three. I am a two-spirit, transgender, interdisciplinary artist, writer, director, storyteller, educator. I recently completed my master's at Emily Carr University of Art and Design, where, yeah, I did a lot of just naming systems of oppression and power dynamics, because being an Indigenous trans two-spirit person, I have felt, you know, like the blunt kind of force of oppression and, you know, having to name all these things. But I also, you know, I'm very grateful and thankful to work with Access to Media Education Society as a producer, project coordinator, and yeah, storyteller. And I started with AIMS, you know, as a participant in the Charting Change Initiative, where AIMS, you know, uses the media arts to create youth-led social change. And so I started with this film called Shifting Tides, where I collaborated with just a lot of, you know, different artists, one being Beanie John from the Kihiyuan Cree Nation. And yeah, it was a poetic call to action, you know, to rise in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. And yeah, like as an artist, I love, you know, telling my story like through visual storytelling, whether through visuals and like sound design. And I'm very thankful, you know, to be just creating work that's meaningful to me. And I just completed my first term as a sessional professor at Emily Carr. I teach Aboriginal material practices there, which has been such a gift. I got really good reviews, thankfully, from my students. And yeah, no, I'm just an artist, you know, just trying to make my way, you know, in a colonial system here in Canada. And I'm very thankful, you know, to be living here on the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. That's who I am, Stephen. And yeah, my pronouns are he, him, they, them. And yeah, that's kind of like the gist of who I am as a person.
Thank you. That was a really well-rounded introduction. And also it's lovely to hear that, you know, it all kind of came full circle at Emily Carr for you, you know, where you gained all of that education and now you can pass it along to your students as well. And so I guess the first thing I'm interested in hearing about is it's Indigenous History Month and it's also in much of Canada Pride Month. So I'm wondering if you could talk a bit about how those two celebrations kind of, you know, intersect for you and what it means, you know, as a, you know, a trans two-spirit person to celebrate both of these things at the same time.
Yeah, no, that's an absolutely great question. Before we started, I was telling Stephen how swamped I was with June, because it being, you know, Indigenous History Month and Pride Month, I have a lot to tell with that. And I've just been booked up, you know, with so many storytelling gigs. So I am a storyteller. So in 2020, I got the Indigenous Storyteller in Residence position at the Vancouver Public Library. And that happened right at the peak of COVID. And I was afraid, you know, that I was going to lose, you know, my contract and my residency. But when everything shut down, you know, I kind of pivoted all the programming to be online so I could make it, you know, virtual presentations. That kind of launched my career into being a storyteller. And I've just had so many different, like, lovely individuals, you know, reach out to me to come and tell my story, because I didn't realize, you know, that I was a storyteller. My friend gave me the job posting and they were looking, you know, for an experienced storyteller. And as I was reading it, I thought they were looking kind of for an elder, you know, and someone who, like, has these, you know, creation stories or these other stories about their culture and, like, whatever nation they come from. And I kind of took a moment, you know, there, and I was like, wait, as a filmmaker, that's how I tell my story, you know? So I asked them if I could do kind of a hybrid event between, like, half filmmaking, half storytelling, because that's kind of what I wanted to do. And yeah, they loved, you know, what I was telling. And I depict, you know, my story of coming out as trans and two-spirit and all the, like, kind of the holistic nature of my being, you know, like, kind of the spiritual, physical, emotional, like, intellectual journey that I've had. And I'm very transparent, you know, when I speak my journey about, you know, my mental health struggles, you know, having to hide away because it became a safety issue for myself. I grew up in a very small town outside of Winnipeg. You know, when I realized that there was no representation around, there were no gay people, no trans people, no Black people, no people of color, like, I felt that there wasn't really a safety net for me to, you know, come out. And so that really took a detrimental toll on me, as, you know, I performed as a cisgendered woman for about 25 years of my life. And there came a time right before I came out where, unfortunately, yeah, I didn't want to be here anymore. And in that moment, I was really kind of, like, gripped with this idea, you know, that there were tangible steps that I could take in this world, you know, to become happier. Like, I could take HRT, like, hormone replacement therapy. I want a top surgery. Like, I've always known, you know, since the moment of self-awareness that I've, you know, wanted to kind of present more masculine. So I was 25 years old when I finally came out, and I had just graduated my undergrad at Emily Carr, and I graduated with a BFA in film, video, and integrated media. And, you know, in that moment, I started again. You know, kind of like my life came about again. And that's really kind of the crux of my storytelling gigs, you know, that I get booked for, is that I tell my lived and felt experiences as performing as kind of Little Rainbow Girl all the way up until I got my new name, you know, Red Buffalo, in another naming ceremony. Just a couple of years ago, like a month before I started my master's program in 2020 at Emily Carr as well. And because I felt, you know, Little Rainbow Girl just probably didn't suit, you know, like what I was feeling. And, you know, I had come across the term like two-spirit, and that really resonated with me. And I started, you know, realizing that I was trans, you know, and, you know, I wasn't afraid anymore. So I took these steps. And within my master's program, I took top surgery, you know. I'm about 3 years now on, like, testosterone, and, like, I'm so much more happier than what I am. And so I literally depict kind of, like, all of that depending on what I'm booked for, whether it's 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour and a half presentations. And I really, you know, dive into the intersectionalities of my identities of being trans and two-spirit, you know, because I've realized, you know, that I've grown up, you know, kind of in a white supremacist culture here in Canada. And I've had questions, you know, from audience members being like, well, if you're two-spirit and you can't be trans too, you know, it's like, well, I'm both. You know, like, I'm, of course I'm both. I'm really thankful, you know, that there's been a push for there to be a platform to tell my story, because what I've realized, you know, is being a healer in my own community, is that I've given permission to folks who have kind of been afraid to be themselves. I've had a 52-year-old, you know, come up to me after one of my sessions and be like, you just gave me the language to come out as non-binary. You know, I was like, yes, absolutely, because I'm very, you know, like animated in my storytelling. I bring in my hoops as well. I have 7 hoops that I kind of integrate within my storytelling. And really, it's a celebration. But yeah, so like with it being Indigenous History Month, I'm just really thankful that I've had colleagues, you know, reach out to schools and tell them about what I do. Like I integrate storytelling, my film, my artwork, and just my lived and felt experiences also as being an educator, you know, to come and share this knowledge with students and it being a very kind of safe environment. And, you know, I'm really happy to be, you know, kind of giving language. And I'm just thankful that there are these pushes.
So before we go any further, I just want to stop and say that those were 2 beautiful names that you were given, Little Rainbow Girl and now Red Buffalo. And I'm curious if you could talk a bit about the significance of those names and why they were passed along to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Like within our culture, you know, I can't speak for every culture, you know, because there's over 500 diverse First Nations, you know, across Canada alone. You know, and so when I speak, I definitely speak, you know, from the Anishinaabe Ojibwe perspective. And so Little Rainbow Girl, you know, in a naming ceremony, I actually got it out here in Mission, you know, from a Cree elder named Frank Satie. Like in the ceremony, you know, our ancestors tell us, you know, they'll tell the knowledge keeper, whoever's hosting the ceremony, like when I'm asking, you know, like what is my name? So I got Little Rainbow Girl and that was a big kind of like indicator as to where my life would go. So being Little Rainbow Girl, like I've had this kind of like mischief, like I really connect with the youth, you know, and being able to like kind of embody, you know, this like playful spirit. And so I got Little Rainbow Girl, but then, you know, when I came out, I was like, maybe Little Rainbow Girl isn't, you know, my only name, because it probably doesn't represent, you know, this new stage of life that I'm entering. And so I did some research, you know, and I went to a couple of talks and I started realizing, you know, that Two-Spirit people, like before colonization, they were actually really revered, you know, within their community because they had 2 spirits, like inside of them, a male and female spirit, you know, and that really, yeah, resonated with me, as I said before. And so I asked, you know, when I started transitioning, I went to my knowledge keeper up at Broken Head Ojibwe Nation, which is about 45 minutes north of Winnipeg. And I was really scared, you know, when I offered her tobacco, because I myself was still, you know, coming to terms with accepting myself as being trans and Two-Spirit. I was expressing how afraid I was and like afraid of being accepted, you know, and worrying about like homophobia, transphobia within, you know, my Indigenous community as well. And she just was like, that's not our way, you know, like, and she was so accepting, you know, and she was just like, yeah, we don't, you know, we don't believe like these notions of homophobia, transphobia. And so in that ceremony, it was shown to me, you know, that it was Red Buffalo, because beforehand I had a dream. I rarely dream. These are, we all are gifted, you know, with different gifts and talents. And before that, I had a dream about a big buffalo. And that really stuck with me. And it was just confirmed, you know, that I would have Red Buffalo as my name. And within that ceremony as well, it was revealed, you know, that we have clan systems, you know, and that I'm Eagle Clan. You know, typically we inherit in my community, we inherit our clan from our father's side. And so my father was a Wolf Clan, Mayingon Clan. And my brother was in that ceremony with me. And it was confirmed that my brother's Wolf Clan as well, but it was shown, you know, that I was actually adopted into the Eagle Clan. And the Eagle Clan are considered like the visionaries, like of our culture. And I was like, right, I'm an artist. And that's kind of like my gift, is being able to kind of envision, you know, these things before I make them. And I rarely dream. And so I've kind of had this feeling that my name would probably involve like the buffalo or something, but you have to confirm it, right? You have to ask people and you have to get it kind of checked out. And so Red Buffalo really resonated with me because the buffalo gave its life for us. We had over 500 million buffalo before colonization. And, you know, we lived in relation, you know, to the land and the buffalo. And John A. MacDonald saw that, you know, and that's when he decided to do like to kill them all off. You know, you can Google, you know, the mass buffalo killings. And so I see, you know, kind of like my role as, and my name, you know, being like having to respect that, you know, having to like kind of go back to basics and respect the buffalo and to, you know, admire it and to, you know, like forge ahead as we reclaim our teachings, our stories. And, you know, I'm in a big process of decolonization right now, which means to unlearn, you know, like the privileges and thought processes of Eurocentric thoughts. And that was really kind of the catalyst moving into my master's there was that. And so, yeah, thank you for that question. Like, I'm very, very proud to have those two names. And that's a great question, Stephen.
Oh, thank you. I do want to make sure that we touch on this during our time. You created a documentary called Transcend. Tell me about making this documentary and I guess the, you know, the response to it or the reaction.
So I'm still making it. You know, I know it's going to be like a 5 to 10 year project probably. And I'm in the process of developing it either into a feature length documentary or a limited series. But basically, it was really important for me, you know, to tell my story, specifically, you know, the fact that my brother and I were adopted, you know, and my mother herself, like her ancestry is German. Her and her parents immigrated to Canada. And, you know, like the beautiful part of my story is the cross-cultural kind of adoption of it and like the blending of the two. And what I'm seeing right now, you know, in our community is a lot of lateral violence. You know, like there's been like this notion of pretendians coming out, you know, or non-Indigenous people, you know, claiming Indigenous ancestry and like taking away, you know, things that are meant for us, right? They're meant to uplift us because of the devastation of colonialism. But my mom, you know, like her being a settler, you know, the beautiful part is that she's really, you know, she was given a name as well. Back in the 80s, she was given a clan and she was invited to ceremonies. And she's really, you know, like been accepted within our community. And it's really important for me, like, as I tell my story, you know, and all the different layers, you know, from gender identity, you know, to the history of Canada, but to really tell an uplifting story of how, you know, these two cultures can come together, you know, to create, you know, something beautiful, but to really kind of dismiss these notions of, yeah, gatekeeping, you know, because we don't, when settlers came, you know, like the Indigenous people invited them, right? We gave them clothing, blankets, food, shelter. And all we really asked, you know, is that they respect the land. But, you know, through time and colonization and all these things, like that's really warped. And now we have this notion of blood quantum, you know, which is super weird. But yeah, with being Transcend, like I want it to be a holistic journey and to A, educate people, but also to tell an uplifting, positive story of how our two cultures can come together and to forge ahead. And yeah, so it's really important for me to include my mom, you know, in that because she's, you know, the only reason like why I'm here. Her name is Wabe Benise Ikwe, which means White Thunderbird Woman. And that's a really powerful name because in our, the Anishinaabe, the Thunderbirds are the healers. You know, we have our Sundance ceremony, which I just returned home from. And we invite, you know, the Thunderbirds in from the south and they come and heal us, right? And she's Mikinak clan, which is turtle clan. And the turtle, you know, in our creation story gave its back, you know, for the land to like come again, come anew, you know. So I really see my mom's even name, you know, pointing to the fact that she would, you know, uplift my brother and my sister and I, you know, to have kind of a good life, to be back in our ways. Cause yeah, she took us to ceremonies, you know, as a kid. And it's important for me to also, you know, name the fact that being a millennial and with the rise of the internet, I kind of pushed that away, you know, as a teenager, as I, you know, started to get older, you know, like I wanted to play soccer with my friends. I wanted to play Xbox, you know, I wanted to watch TV, you know, I didn't want to go to ceremony. I didn't want to do any of that. But my mom accepted that, you know, and she like kind of didn't force it upon us. And, you know, through our lived experience, I came back. You know, I came back to our ways when my mom was diagnosed with cancer a few years back. And that was the first time I prayed again. You know, I prayed to Gijimani, to the universe, You know, I offered tobacco and I just asked them, you know, to save my mom. And the next morning I had this incredible like spiritual experience where I had like 20 eagles fly over my car as I was driving from White Rock, you know, to Emily Carr, like Granville Island there in Vancouver. And that really kind of jumpstarted again my spiritual journey, you know, and it's important to touch like on all the aspects of my journey, from like the physical transformation to like the cultural transformation, you know, coming full circle back into our ways. And so that's really what I want Transcend to like to be and to kind of encapsulate. And yeah, I'm really wanting it to just be a positive story. So I'm really excited for that to come into fruition when it does.
All right, I've got one more question for you, Nova. It might sound simple, but I'm sure that it's not. But what does it mean to you to be a storyteller?
Being a storyteller, you know, means I go into these places and I kind of feel what people maybe need to hear. And so, yeah, I have a general arc. You know, I typically get booked for the intersectional storytelling, and I touch, you know, on these pivotal moments and these anecdotes, you know, but I can always feel, you know, what needs to be said, or if someone, you know, needs me to elaborate on a more different part of my story. But being a storyteller means, you know, like being able to go into these different spaces and to, you know, go back to our original ways of storytelling. Our people, you know, come from an oral storytelling tradition. That's how we've always, you know, passed on knowledge from generation to generation. And, you know, like in my thesis, I had to name white supremacy characteristics, you know, and one of them being the worship of the written word. And I really came, you know, to this point of contention in my master's, realizing, you know, that I couldn't go to a library, you know, and like look up what a Sundance ceremony was, like what a sweat lodge ceremony was. You really have to go and experience it. And so like to kind of like resist like the worship of the written word, I wanted to be a storyteller. And I, you know, I got this really amazing residency with the VPL, and they, you know, trusted me, you know, to tell my story in an oral fashion. And, you know, I've realized that that's one of my gifts as well, being a storyteller, is, you know, just sharing that. And I've really seen it heal people and kind of bridge different communities together and understanding. Like I have a lot of, when I tell my story, I talk about, you know, like gender identity, you know, navigating all of that. But I've also had some really good moments of education in that, you know, being a storyteller means sharing knowledge, you know, in a good way that makes me feel good too. You know, it doesn't mean I have to do like a keynote presentation. I can tell a really fluid, flexible story with my hoops and with my film. After we end this interview, you know, I'm going off to a school, an elementary school, to do two back-to-back storytelling presentations. And I'm going to be talking about, you know, our creation story, our seven grandfather teachings, and my lived experiences with my hoops and story. And then I usually end with a Q&A because a lot of folks have questions and answers. And I find that really conducive and just nourishing for me.
Amazing. All right. Well, I hate to cut the conversation short, Nova, but it was such a treat chatting with you, you know, this month, and really appreciate you taking the time to be here with us on Rabble Radio.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'm so thankful, you know, to always be, you know, given opportunities to share my story. And I hope a lot of people, you know, will get a lot out of this.
That was Rabble's national politics reporter, Stephen Wenzel, and Red Buffalo Nova Weipart in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Stephen and Nova. Switching gears now, here is Rabble editor Nick Seabrook to catch us up on the top news stories of the week in a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. Toronto has a new progressive mayor. On Monday, June 26, Olivia Chow won a by-election for mayor, promising a more affordable, safer, and caring city. Chow, a former Toronto City Councillor and Member of Parliament, took an early lead in the polls and held her lead right up to election night. Former Toronto Deputy Mayor Anna Bailao closed the gap with an endorsement from a disgraced former Mayor John Tory. But when the final votes were tallied, Olivia Chow's lead held with 34,000 more votes than her closest rival. Chow faces significant challenges, coming into the leadership of a city that is deeply in debt, and working with a provincial government whose leader said a Chau victory would be an unmitigated disaster. Despite that, Chau says she's eager to get to work and hopes to be sworn in 2 weeks' time. In national politics, the 94 calls to action from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission on Indian residential schools continues to be completed at a snail's pace. Just 2 calls for action were completed last year, which is the average number of yearly completed actions since they were issued nearly 10 years ago. Last week, the Native Women's Association of Canada published a new booklet to help non-Indigenous Canadians better understand the genocide perpetrated against Indigenous peoples in Canada. On June 19th, human rights lawyer Fanny LaFontaine, who authored the booklet, said, quote, "The policies of colonial destruction of Indigenous peoples took place insidiously over decades. The acts of violence and intent to destroy are structural, systemic, and cut across multiple administrations and political leaders." End quote. In world news, Rabble parliamentary reporter Carl Nirenberg analyzed a new House of Commons committee report that warns of the parallels of the treatment of Tibetans in China and the Canadian government's treatment of Indigenous peoples in Canada. Such parallels include Canada's Indian residential school system and the residential school system that nearly 1 million Tibetan children are being forced to attend. The schools separate children from their families and, according to the committee report, also restricts the children from taking part in their culture and speaking their native language. This is eerily similar to what Indigenous children in Canada were subjected to in this country's residential school system. Last year, a motion put forward by NDP MP Leah Gazan that called the Canadian residential school system a genocide was passed unanimously in the House of Commons. As always, you can find the full version of these stories and much, much more on Rabble.ca.
Rabble.ca shares news for the rest of us. We believe news for the rest of us is about creating a more informed and connected world. Help Rabble.ca make quality, progressive news and views accessible to all. Become a Rabble Rouser today and support us during our summer fundraiser with a one-time or monthly donation.
That's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Do you want to share Rabble Radio on your campus, college, or community radio station? It's easy. To find out more information on how your local radio station can become a host for Rabble Radio, please email us at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.